We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brennaken. And on tonight's episode, I will be reviewing the latest Marvel movie, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. So, yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 premiered tonight, and I was excited for it, and I really, really loved the movie. I thought it was great, and it did a lot of things right. It pretty much did everything right, I thought. But before I get into my review, you know, I may go into slight spoilers. I might not go too heavy with the spoilers in this review. But just in case I do, there's your fair warning. There's your warning right now. If you haven't seen the movie yet, which is highly likely considering it just came out today, then go watch the movie first and then come back and listen to the episode. But then again, I may not go too heavy with the spoilers. So, you know, but if you don't care and you want to hear my thoughts first and then go see the movie, then by all means, please continue. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, you know, it's the third and final movie of the Guardians trilogy. And, you know, we've been looking forward to this one for the last 6 years, and it did not disappoint. It was great all the way through, I thought, and I loved what they did with everything. But before I get into the specifics of, you know, what I liked about the movie, or what I loved about the movie, let's get into the plot. So, basically, the plot is, you know, if you remember from the end of the, if you watched the Christmas special that they released on Disney Plus back in November, you'll know that the Guardians had set up their headquarters on Nowhere, and they were rebuilding Nowhere, and basically had it set up to where it was a thriving society, or maybe not quite thriving, but at least a functioning society. You know, like it was a newly established, soon to be utopia. And it was nice, you know, like it was kind of cool that they had their own headquarters and, you know, where they a place where they could call home instead of just a ship that they traveled from, you know, planet to planet. It was nice that they finally had a home base. But yeah, the beginning of this movie pretty much sees them as the, you know, they finally kind of established their headquarters and have finally finished rebuilding the cities within Nowhere. And everything's going well until they get attacked by Adam Warlock, who was teased at the end of the previous movie in one of the 5 post-credit scenes. And, you know, of course, Adam Warlock was sent by the High Sovereign the Sovereign, yeah, who, you know, she created him to, you know, kill the Guardians, because if you remember in the second movie, Rocket's dumbass stole the Amulax batteries. And, that was the whole reason why they ended up attacking them, and why the whole reason why they were a problem, and why they were their adversaries in the second movie. But yeah, so the Sovereign, or the Empress of the Sovereign, not the Sovereign, that's the race of people, yeah. But Aisha, yeah, the Empress of the Sovereign, sends Adam, and they find out that he has ties to the High Evolutionary. And, and the High Evolutionary, Rocket has ties with him. Rocket's backstory, you know, it relies heavily on, the High Evolutionary. And it turns out Rocket had a run-in with him in the past. Yeah, he has some history with him, not to go into spoilers, you know, but he has some history with the guy. And so they have to stop him from essentially perfecting the universe, because basically what he does is, you know, he horrifically experiments and genetically mutates animals. He horrifically experiments on them and mutates them and like rips their limbs off and like attaches mechanical limbs. And you know, it's just horrifying and terrible what he does to these animals. But he's basically trying to perfect like animals and transforming them into humans, so he can like perfect a like a sort of a counter to Earth, like it's like Earth but opposite, and it's called Counter-Earth. And yeah, he's trying to perfect, you know, Earth, and then protect or perfect the universe. And so they have to stop him before he decides to, you know, because he claims that he wants to make things perfect. But you know, Rocket points out, he's like, he doesn't want to make things perfect. He just hates things the way they are, you know, and he just wants to change things the way he sees fit, and just, you know, screw with sentient life, you know, and kill and like create life, kill it, torture it, and yeah, and kill it when it doesn't agree with his methods, or when they decide to stand up for themselves. And so yeah, they have to face off against him, and along the way they learn some about themselves, they learn about each other, and they learn a lot about themselves, and they learn a lot about Rocket, because you know, for the past two movies his backstory was kind of shrouded in mystery, whereas everyone else's backstory we pretty much knew, or we knew the gist of, we knew enough of everyone's backstories to where we got a sense of who all these characters were. But with Rocket, his backstory was a little bit more of a mystery, and you know, we finally delve into that in this movie, and it's very sad. And it was great though. I loved all the flashback scenes that we got with Rocket and his friend group of like horribly disfigured and genetically enhanced animals. And what I thought was cool, what I thought was kind of neat, was that Linda Cardellini voiced one of the one of his animal friends, who if you've seen either of the two trailers they released for the movie, she is the otter with the like mechanical arms where her real arm should be. And yeah, Linda Cardellini voices Lila, the Rocket's otter friend. And it's really cool that they cast her, because I'm like, oh yeah, she's been in the MCU before. She's Hawkeye's wife. She's Clint's wife. And I thought she did a great job voice acting or voicing the character. She's a great voice actor. And but no surprise, I mean, she voiced Wendy on Gravity Falls, and you know, she did a great job there. Of course, you know, some of you may know her as Velma from the live action Scooby-Doo movies, at least the first two that came out in the theatrically released ones from the early 2000s. But yeah, so she did a great job. But yeah, you know, it was nice finally getting to know Rocket's backstory. That was really cool to see, and very tragic too. You know, how he became the badass, kind of emotionally shut off raccoon that he is, you know. And yeah, that was very interesting. A nice in-depth look into how Rocket became who he is. And but you know, Rocket, I mean, it is, in a way, I guess you could say it is his movie, but all the Guardians get their fair share of screen time. They all get their moment to shine, which is great. Like, you know, even Kraglin and Cosmo, who I wouldn't say they're not out of commission there, but you know, to when you know, when they discover, oh, the High Evolutionary was behind the attack on us, or you know, he's the one who sent Adam to attack us, they're like, okay, well, we gotta go and stop him. So they basically ask Kraglin and Cosmo to hold down the fort. They're like, okay, you guys look after Nowhere while we're gone. And so, you know, they're not with the rest of the team until like towards the end, but you know, they're there in the beginning, and they have a good amount of time with the team at the end, you know. So even though Kraglin and Cosmo joined later on in the series of movies, you know, they still had a a good part to play and an important part to play. And I just liked seeing, I liked the back and forth that Kraglin and Cosmo had. And I liked seeing Cosmo. I kind of wish we saw more of her, but she was a nice addition and a welcome addition to the Guardians. Of course, if you've, going back to the Christmas special or the holiday special, if you saw that, you'll know that she, you know, fully joined the group in that special. Of course, she had been, we've seen her in the, she had been in the previous two movies, but like sort of in the background, like when they go, is it the Collector? I believe his name's the Collector, but, when they go to the Collector and show him the Power Stone, you know, and he explains to them what the Power Stone is, we see Cosmo in one of the, like, cryogenic tubes, and it's like, oh, okay, there's a dog dressed up in an astronaut suit, I wonder what that's about. And then, of course, I believe we see her again in the second one, but I'm not quite sure where we see her. But it was kind of cool that, like, it was a little, you know, background, you know, blink and you'll miss it moment, you know, that they kind of established her in the previous two movies. And then in the Christmas special, we finally get to see her, you know, and like, it's like, oh, she's joined the group. That's kind of neat. You know, like they befriended her because, you know, they established, you know, they established their headquarters on Nowhere. And that's where the collector's base was. Actually, wait, what's his name, the Collector? Let me look. That's going to kill me if I don't look that up. It was. Okay, yeah. Yeah, Benicio del Toro, Tanlir Tavon, the Collector. Okay, yeah, so I was right. Okay, for some reason I thought, I was like, no, that's not it, is it? But I was right. I shouldn't have doubted myself. So, yeah. You know, so I thought it was cool. It's like, oh, okay, so I guess they rescued Cosmo when they went back to Nowhere, and they're like, oh, this dog, you know, we should probably get this dog out of this cryogenic tube. You know, and then I guess she's like, hey, can I join and the group? And she's like, and they're like, yeah, sure. But yeah, she made for a nice addition. And yeah, I mean, despite, you know, there being nine Guardians now, and, you know, I feel like they all got their moment to shine, and they got several moments to shine together as a team. And they all get more than like one moment or like a couple lines of dialogue, but like they all get like their one big moment their one big action moment or their one big important moment, like displaying their powers. And it's like, oh shit, that's cool. Like, when Kraglin, well, towards the end, he is trying to use the headgear that Yondu had that he gave him at the end of the second movie. And he's trying to use the headgear and the arrow. Cause like when the headgear is attached to his head, he can whistle and it activates the arrow. And, you know, he can, depending on, you know, the whistling, like how he whistles, like he can navigate the arrow and shoot it through any target that's coming his way. But he's trying to activate the, you know, he's trying to dig deep in himself and find the, you know, power within him in a way. And he gets like a vision of Yondu telling him to, you know, he's like, you got this, boy, you know. And of course I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, he gets the confidence and inspiration from the ghost of Yondu. And there's a badass scene where, like in the second one, where Yondu was just, you know, walking through the ship and killing all the Ravagers, you know, which was a badass moment. We get a almost equally badass moment with Kraglin shooting the arrow, like whistling and shooting the arrow all across, you know, the sky, killing all the villains that are coming, or the bad guys that are coming his way. And it was just a great moment. And, but yeah, they all have their one big epic moment to display their powers. And that's awesome. I liked how I liked that the pacing was really good. Like, despite the movie being 150 minutes. So it was like, yeah, 2 hours and, yeah, 2 hours and 20 minutes. Or it was 2.5 hours. Okay. Well, despite it being 2.5 hours, see, and that goes to show, I didn't realize how long it was. I thought it was a little under that. You know, I'm like, I knew it was over 2 hours, but I didn't think it was 2.5. But the fact that I didn't realize it was that long, goes to show how well the pacing in the movie is. And the pacing was really well done, like, especially in the beginning. It's like, boom, 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 you know, like one, you know, like they establish, you know, where the characters are on nowhere, you know, Adam shows up, attacks, which is a great action sequence, by the way, where they're all trying and failing miserably to, you know, attack Adam and, you know, stop him to no avail. I mean, they finally do stop him, but like, it's like all their attempts are futile at first until they finally do apprehend him, or they finally do, you know, they don't kill him, but they, like, they stop him and they ends up escaping before they can like question him or kill him, you know? And, but yeah, fantastic action sequence, you know, within the first like 10 minutes, pretty much, you know, showing all the Guardians, you know, all at different times, you know, like one right after the other, you know, trying desperately to beat the shit out of Adam. And that was great. But yeah, and then, you know, and then it's like, okay, well, we gotta, you know, Rocket has ties with the High Evolutionary. We gotta go find him and stop him from enacting his plans. And, you know, so it's, and, you know, and all the set pieces are great too. All the, as with the previous two movies, all the different planets they go to are very unique and distinct looking. And visually, they're weird and fascinating to look at. Like, they go to one planet, was it the Orga Corp? I believe I got the name, the Orgosphere. Yeah, the Orgosphere. And it's like this fleshy, hairy, you know, slimy, like the outside is like fleshy and slimy, but then the inside is like, it looks like it's almost made out of like white marble. And it's, yeah, it's like, it's just this weird kind of like, it's like this highly guarded, well, basically it's the headquarters for the High Evolutionary's company, OrgaCorp, which, basically, you know, his company is like responsible for creating, along with him, like he's the head of this company that, you know, is responsible for creating several different species and races of people and aliens and creatures. And, you know, and Gamora says in the movie, in some corners of the universe, he's considered God or a God. And, or no, she says God. Yeah. She's like, in some corners of the universe, he's considered God. And that was really cool to see, you know, like the fact that he had like this whole, the fact that he, you know, he's so powerful, he has this, you know, all these soldiers and these, other people, you know, hired at this corporation, like he, the fact that he's built his own company to like keep track of all the species that he's created, you know, and, like keep an eye on them and keep track of them was insane. But yeah, that was a cool place. That was a cool kind of planet. Of course, Nowhere is awesome. It's just the fact that it's a giant, just the fact that it's the giant skull of a celestial just floating in space that, you know, like I'm wondering how that celestial died in the first place, but like, it's just a celestial's skull that's just been floating out in space for God knows how long. And, you know, eventually people just decided to take residence in the skull. And and yeah, just the fact that the Guardians HQ is like in the skull of a celestial is crazy. But yeah, it's that's always cool whenever we go there. Counter-Earth is really cool because that's one of the High Evolutionary's planets, you know, where he has developed life to the point, like he's evolved the animals, you know, over the years, his genetic mutations and his experiments with animals has, you know, got improved over the years. And the residents of Counter-Earth are these humanoid animal creatures where they're still, you know, have the faces and like the skin of animals, but they walk upright. They're bipedal, you know, they walk upright like humans and, you know, like wear clothes and go to work. And they, it's funny because like when they go to this planet in the movie, it looks so much like Earth. Like, it looks almost exactly like Earth, right down to, like, the suburban neighborhood areas of the, you know, that they land in. which is funny. Like, they just land in the middle of this little suburban neighborhood, and it's like, you might want to be careful where you park. You're probably going to crush a couple of those houses. Like, the fact they didn't crush any either of the houses were funny, but like, they were like a foot, like the ship was like a foot away from being crushed, or the houses were like a foot away from being crushed by the ship when they where they landed, and when they landed. But yeah, but when they land, like, yeah, it looks exactly like Earth, except for all the people are like animal, humanoid animals that speak this different language. And yeah, it's just cool. And then, of course, you know, the bunch of other planets and places they go to, those are just a couple, but yeah, they're neat. Visually, they're great. There's some, I like the fact that they, you know, because this is the end of the trilogy, I like the fact that they, everything comes full circle. Like, everything's brought back into this one, and nothing feels rushed and nothing feels out of place or like it wasn't going anywhere. Like, we see, because Stallone, Sylvester Stallone, was introduced in the second one as a Ravager, you know, and we end up seeing him in this one. And, the you know, the way they bring back Gamora, it's like, oh, yeah, so she was with the Ravagers, you know, and she was with Stallone's section, like, his crew, his Ravager crew. And so it was cool, like, the, you know, it's like, oh, so that's how Gamora comes back, because... Yeah, so, and then they run into her because Nebula was keeping in contact, or keeping in touch with Gamora, which she kept from Peter, and that was cool how they brought her back, and you know, it's like, oh yeah, so they brought back Stallone, cool, and then of course, you know, they brought back, you know, we got to see Aisha, the Empress of the Sovereign again, yeah, and that was neat. Oh, and the soundtrack. Before I get into the acting and the ending, although I'm not going to like spoil the ending, but before I get into that, the soundtrack again is on point. You know, if you liked the soundtrack, if you liked the music from the previous two movies, you're going to love the soundtrack for this one. That's a given. And what's cool too, is that they use, they incorporate some 90s and 2000s songs, as well as, you know, the classic 70s and 80s songs that the previous two movies were known for, or, you know, those decades of music, you know. So I thought that was cool. And it also made sense because at the end of the second movie, Kraglin gives Peter a Zune, you know, which, if you don't know what a Zune is, it's basically Bill Gates' sad attempt at an iPod. I say sad attempt, but, you know, it didn't take off nearly as well as the iPod did, which, of course, now the iPod is seen as obsolete because iPhones can do what iPods do, or what they did back then. You know, but back then, you know, Bill Gates tried to make an iPod, and his attempt was the Zune, and, you know, needless to say, that didn't, you know, that didn't take off quite as well as the iPod did. But yeah, you know, because at the end of the second one, yeah, he gets, Kraglin gives Peter the Zune to replace his Walkman that Ego broke. And so I like the fact that they included some more recent songs from like the 90s and 2000s, because it's like, oh yeah, you know, a Zune, like a more, I'm trying to think of the word, a more digitally, updated, like updated technology, like a Zune, you know, instead of a Walkman, of course, you know, and something that you could like digitally like add songs to, like buy songs and put on there and store them, instead of the Walkman where, you know, you have a tape that you put in. Of course, you know, you could and would have songs from decades past, you know, the 80s, you know. So I liked that they included songs from the 90s and 2000s. I don't know why I was blanking on the word for like upgraded technology, like what, but anyway, that was cool, and the action is great too. Like I said, the opening action sequence, or not opening, but the first action sequence after we establish everyone, you know, we see everyone on Nowhere, kind of a, you know, just living their lives, helping the citizens of Nowhere, you know, kind of, you know, get used to, or, you know, not get used to, but like just kind of, you know, help them in their everyday lives. You know, that scene where they're fighting Adam Warlock was great. There's so many great action sequences. It's hard to say what's the best, but perhaps that one's one of the best. And there's another fantastic scene where, or a fantastic action sequence where they're in the High Evolutionary's ship, and he's sent an army of like his genetically enhanced monstrosities after them to kill them, and they're and it's like all one shot. Like I don't think it cuts once, but like it's they're in this, you know, kind of elongated hallway, and it's all one shot, and we get to see all seven of them. Yeah, Kraglin and Cosmo aren't with the group at this part in the movie. They're helping, but they're like off in another part of the ship. But we get to see the seven of them, Groot, Rocket, Gamora, you know, we all fighting these creatures and killing them. And, you know, the kills are pretty brutal. Of course, you know, I mean, they're, you know, genetically enhanced robotic animal mutant creatures, you know. So, it's not like too gory, but like it is like, you do see their blood, like, you know, Gamora cuts one in half, you know, Groot, you know, stabs one of them and, like, shoots thorns, like, from all, like, parts of his body, implodes his hand, like, he grows his hand and, like, stretches the thorns out, like, the twigs and thorns out from his body and, like, stabs him and, like, and he looks like a porcupine. Like, he looks like a sea urchin by the time Groot gets done with him. And I was like, oh, that was cool. And that was a great action sequence. But, yeah, there's a lot more great action sequences. And Groot. And going back to Groot, I loved what they did. Like, they showed off some cool new abilities that he has. But they didn't really feel like they pulled it out of their asses. Like, it actually felt like, oh, that makes sense that Groot could do this. Like, there's a scene where they're falling midair, and Groot, Groot and Peter, and Groot catches Peter midair and, like, grows wings out of the back of his back, like, made out of twigs. And they just, like, I mean, they don't flap or anything, but, you know, they're just, like, stationary, but they use the wings to glide down to the ground. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then there's another scene where he grows into like a kaiju version of himself, and I'm like, oh, I guess that makes sense Groot could do that, because, you know, we've seen him kind of elongate himself before, so like to see him turn into like a, like, kind of stretch himself out and turn into a, you know, bigger version of himself was pretty cool. That was neat. But yeah, I loved the new kind of new powers that he displayed, like some of the new abilities that he had, or at least that he showed, because he probably had these in the previous two movies, we just didn't see them, or, you know, he found out about them in between the movies, you know, when he was growing back up to his adult size. So that was cool. The acting from everyone is on point. Chris Pratt, you know, kills it as Peter, as Star-Lord. I loved, Sean Gunn as both Kraglin and Rocket. I mean, if you don't know, Sean Gunn, he plays Kraglin, but he also does the motion capture for Rocket. So, you know, he did great for that. But yeah, Bradley Cooper as the voice of Rocket, you know, gives it his all. And, especially in one of the flashback scenes, there's a scene where, like, it's like, man, that was a really great vocal performance, you know, from him. And, they did a great job. Sylvester Stallone was great in her little role. I mean, her little role, sorry. I was reading the names, and then I said her, because I was looking at one of the female, female cast members. He was great in his role that he had, as the Ravager. What was his character's name again? Let me look. Let me check. Stakar Agord. Yeah, Stakar Agord. I believe I'm pronouncing his name right. He did a good job with his small amount of screen time. I liked the... Oh, yeah. Elizabeth Debicki was, she did a great job again as the Empress, Aisha. Maria Bakalova was great as Cosmo. I thought she was adorable. Just the fact that, again, you know, Cosmo is just this golden retriever astronaut that can, like, telepathically speak to people and move things with her mind. I'm like, that's awesome and adorable. And she just has this cute little Russian accent, you know, like it almost made me want to see more of her in the movie. But you know, what we do get, again, what we get of her and Kraglin is enough. It's good. You know, I mean, they're featured on the poster with everyone else. So it's not like they're not considered members of the Guardians. Like, they're full fledged members. It's just, they needed someone to watch nowhere, you know, until they got back. but yeah, Pom Clementeef is great as Mantis. And she has some great, moments, you know, her and Chris Pratt have some great moments together because, of course, again, going back to the Christmas special, she revealed, and, you know, we found out too, we the audience found out along with Peter, but she revealed to Peter that the two of them are related, that she's his sister, and there's some nice brother-sister moments between the two of them. Dave Bautista, again, does a great job as Drax. And there's a little bit more, you know, I mean, obviously comedic relief. He's the funny, dumb one, but, you know, and there's some great moments between him and Mantis, being goofballs and Mantis getting annoyed with him. but there's also some, they do add some, depth to his character as well. And like some growth on his part, and growth, like emotional growth and like, a real sense of maturity by the time we get to the end of the movie, like how his character ends off. That's great. I said Sean Gunn. Vin Diesel, again, really only has one line, but of course the inflections, and the tone of how he says it, you know, it's great. It's still a great vocal performance. I don't know if he does the motion capture for Groot. He might, in which case, you know, he does a good job with that too. And, oh, Karen Gillan as Nebula. She's great. Will Pol... Oh, well, okay. Zoe Saldana. She was great as Gamora. And I liked the fact... It's cool because, like, she's playing a... Not regressed version of the character, but, like, a younger, less experienced version of, you know, the Gamora we got to know throughout the first two Guardians movies and Infinity War. You know, because, you know, in Endgame... You know, they time traveled and 2014 Gamora came back to the present, you know, along with 2014 Nebula and 2014 Thanos. And she decided to stay in the present and she just kind of, you know, peaced out at the end of Endgame. And, you know, Peter was like, where did she go? You know, like because he was trying to find her using their ship's like GPS or whatever, you know, like their tracking beacon, and he couldn't find her. And, so, you know, it was nice to see Peter kind of get out of his slump of, you know, having Gamora just gone from the team. And it was cool to see her back. And I liked what they did between the two of them. Cause like, it was kind of cool seeing her warm back up to Peter and his, goofball charm, you know, and, I won't say what happens between the two of them, but I like the way they end things off and it kind of sets things up to where, it's like, if we ever see these two again, it's like, oh yeah, that maybe they'll get back together. Although I guess I kind of just revealed what happened. They don't get back together. But you know, I mean, it is cool the development that Gamora gets throughout this movie because, of course, you know, it's like, oh, well, she, you know, this is a younger her from before she met the Guardians. So, of course, she's going to have to go through all this character development. She already went through in the first two movies, but I think they do a good job at, you know, showing her development and, you know, like kind of warming back up to the group. I thought that was great. And also she gets to show off more of a rage, I feel like, in this movie than she, even more than she did in the first one when, you know, back when they were first starting to warm up to each other, you know, like her and along with the rest of the group were starting to bond and become a family and a team, you know. So in the last two performances of the, you know, main cast, Will Poulter as Adam Warlock, I thought he did a great job. He was great. I kind of wish he had a little bit more screen time, but again, what he gets, he does a great job with. I loved him in Midsommar, just the asshole that pissed on the tree, and the one of Christian's friends in Midsommar. He did a great job in that movie. What was his character's name? I want to say it was let me check. Mark, yeah. Mark, he was the asshole that pissed on the dead tree and they cut his face off because he didn't realize it was a sacred tree. He was an asshole, but he didn't deserve to get his face peeled off. And he was also in We're the Millers, and he's been in a bunch of other stuff, which I haven't seen that movie, but I've heard it's a good movie. It's got him, Jason Sudeikis, Jennifer Aniston. It's, you know, basically they're like a bunch of drug runners that decide to operate and cover up their appearance of being drug dealers by pretending to be a family going on vacation in a van or in an RV. And it sounds funny. I mean, I want to see it. I've seen like bits and pieces, like clips and memes from the movie, but I've never seen the full movie. But he did a great job. And I liked the development he went through throughout the movie. And I liked how his story ended. And last but not least, Chukwudi Iwuji. I believe I'm pronouncing his name right. he did a fantastic job. He was a great villain. He did a fantastic job playing the High Evolutionary. And I love that they don't like try to sympathize, make you sympathize with him. They don't try to redeem him. He's just an asshole through and through throughout the entire movie. And he only gets worse throughout the movie. But every time we flash back to, you know, what his and Rocket's backstory, you know, or, you know, his relationship with Rocket, he is just beyond ass, you know, beyond a dick, beyond an asshole. Like, there's a scene, and I won't spoil why, but, like, Rocket's crying, and he's just mocking his crying. Like, he's just being a total asshat about it. He's like, oh, did I win the, it looks like I won the crying contest, you know, and, like, he's just constantly berates him and shitting on him, and even berates his own crew, and, like, just the savageness, just how savage he can get in the movie, and a lot of his lines, you know, he has some great lines in the movie, and just, yeah, just the fact that he's so, you know, has his head so far up his ass that he believes he's doing the right thing for the right reasons. Those are some of the best kind of villains, the ones that, you know, whether you sympathize with them or not, and they don't make you sympathize with them, but whether you sympathize with them or not, the villains that think they're doing the right thing when they're not are always interesting to watch, you know, because it's like, why do you think what you're doing is the best way to do things or the right way? You know, it's clearly not. But yeah, so that was great. And I loved, what else? Yeah, soundtrack was great. Yeah, I mentioned that. Acting was great. I'm trying to think, what else was there? Oh, and so, okay, the last but not least, the ending. I loved how they ended the movie. Everyone beautifully had their stories wrapped up in a satisfying way that, you know, felt true to each and every one of the characters. And yeah, I liked how they all kind of go off on their own paths. And I like how each one of them, yeah, I like where each one of them end off on. Like, it was really cool to see. And I won't say, again, I know I spoiled that they split up. But, you know, I mean, there's a chance they might come back together, you know, but it's cool to see what they end up, where they end up going in their lives, or, you know, like, where you can kind of see, like, we see the beginnings of, like, where they're all going to go, going forward in their lives. That's really cool. And also, make sure you stick around, because there are two post-credit scenes, or there's a mid-credit scene and a post-credit scene. And they're both, I mean, I'd say they're essential. Yeah. I mean, don't skip them, you know, 'cause one of them's, regarding the Guardians in a way. And then the other one's about Peter. And I won't say what his scene is about, but or what the Guardian scene is about. You'll have to wait and watch them. But they're those are two really great post-credit scenes. But yeah, so I mean, if this is the last time we see the group, I mean the Guardians like together, you know, it was I think it was a great movie. And in my opinion, I mean, and you know, it was a great swan song. You know, it was a great final movie to wrap up this great trilogy. And in my opinion, this was the best movie of the three. It might not have been the funniest, but it was, I mean, it was, I don't know, I guess this kind of sounds contradictory to what I'm about to say. It wasn't the funniest, but it was on par with the other two. I mean, like, in terms of the comedy, but I do think the other two were a little funnier. But because this one does have a darker tone, in a way, especially, you know, regarding Rocket's backstory, and the stakes are a little higher, I feel like, you know, that it kind of makes sense why this one isn't as packed with jokes. But that being said, there are a good amount of jokes that are really funny in the movie, and I do think they balance the tone. Like, James Gunn does a great job at balancing the tone between, you know, super serious, dark, ass moment, you know, you know, really dark, really grim, tense moments, and then, like, the comedy. You know, it doesn't really feel like emotional whiplash. I think he does a great job with it. But yeah, so, yeah, I mean, there probably were more and probably funnier jokes in the first two, but there are still a lot of funny jokes and a lot of laughs to be had in this one. But I think because it is a darker tone, I feel like that's probably also why it might not be as jam-packed with as many funny jokes, if that makes sense. But there's, again, there still are a lot of great funny jokes. But yeah, so I guess to end things off with, yeah, it was my favorite one. I'm glad James Gunn, I'm glad Disney pulled their heads out of their asses and decided to rehire James Gunn after they fired him, you know, because of the resurfacing of his controversial posts on Twitter. But I am glad, though, in a way that they fired him. I'm glad they rehired him, but I'm even more glad they fired him, because if they hadn't have fired him in the first place, then we wouldn't have gotten the Suicide Squad and the first season of Peacemaker, which are great. And by the way, Chukwudi Iwuji, he played Burn on Peacemaker, and when I saw that he was in this, I'm like, oh, that's cool, because like James Gunn is like using an actor that he, the fact that he was in a DC show, you know, that he worked on, and he's bringing him over into his last Marvel movie. I'm like, oh, that's cool. And kind of funny, because, you know, the rivals in a way, Marvel, DC, you know. But that was cool that he was using an actor that he had used previously in another, well, something else that he had been working on. Oh, and also, she has a small role, but the actress who played, what was her name? Oh, yeah, she played Amelia Harcourt in Peacemaker. And the Suicide Squad. But Jennifer Holland. Yeah, she was a member of the team, of Peacemaker's team, along with Mern and Peacemaker. But yeah, she is a security employee of Orga Corp. And she has like, you know, 2 minutes maybe. But she did a great job. And yeah, so overall, great movie. It's my favorite of the trilogy. And if this is the last we see of the Guardians, it ended perfectly. It was a great ending. For all the characters, and a great swan song for the trilogy. So yeah, I guess that does it for tonight's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Next week, I will be reviewing season one. It'll be a double review. I'll be reviewing season one of Yellow Jackets and season one of Beef. So look forward to that review next Friday. As always, I hope you guys enjoyed tonight's episode. I hope you guys have a great weekend, and I will see you all next Friday. And until then, take care.